You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Yeah, you know, I don't care about that. I mean, I really don't. This is a pure team sport. I love that part of it. I mean, that's why I got in it. I didn't get in it to, you know, for any other reason other than to win games and to win them with great people. And so we bust our tail to do that as coaches and players. That's what I think needs the respect. And so the other stuff, you take care of that, everything else happens. That's not really where my mind goes. I mean, it's really the last thing on my mind.
Middays on the Score.
That's Andy Reid. You can win it with great people, and you can win it with Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Frank Clark. That's okay. You can win it with whoever you want, but there's no doubting the fact that, indeed, they won it. The Bernstein and McKnight Show, Super Monday, talking about all that happened yesterday, and we can get the football thoughts of this man, Eric Edholm, who is on Twitter at Eric_Edholm, NFL and NFL draft analyst for Yahoo Sports, who joins us regularly on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Well, they did it again, Eric. It was almost to script. We had an over-conservative Kyle Shanahan blowing a fourth quarter lead, and the magnificent young quarterback being magnificent again, as so many expected he could.
Yeah, I mean, with Kyle, you heard him all week long, and you know, he sort of tried to sidestep the questions about, you know, learning from 28-3 and all that. I was just sort of shocked at how he played certain elements of the game, especially at the end of the half, and then, you know, kind of, you know, some of the decisions later, I don't think were necessarily awful ones or anything like that. But that final possession of the first half sort of sticks in my head. But yeah, I just didn't understand how he could feel great about being tied 10-10 when the dude across the field is as good as he is, even if they had his number early on at one point.
Yeah, I just kind of think that coaching decision mistakes are mostly fixable in this league, and Andy Reid is a guy that kind of exemplifies it. He's made mistakes before. He's altered his approach. He's changed his idea about how to be aggressive during a real big game that we saw yesterday. I would give Kyle Shanahan as even a chance to get back to, you know, if not a Super Bowl, then prominence as anybody in the league.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I know people are sort of saying, well, what does this mean long-term for Jimmy's place with him? And, you know, can they win a Super Bowl together? And I don't know about all that this morning. Well, you know, that's probably for another day. But I think he's a really good coach, and I think he sort of just got out of character in this game a little bit. And, you know, I felt like it sent a pretty big message about how he was feeling, both about, you know, his defense ability to stop Mahomes should he go three and out at the end of the first half and give the ball right back to him, but also about, you know, his faith in what Garoppolo could do in a two-minute drill. I just, that was, you know, something that stuck in my head. I understand that had Kittle not been called for that OPI, or, you know, I mean, you know, Jimmy did what he needed to do, but it did reflect Shanahan's thinking, not calling that timeout sooner and letting a whole minute, you know, come off the clock there.
And we keep underrating the performance of the Chiefs defense. The fact that they did what they did in the fourth quarter. I mean, I understand why it's our nature to look at the heroics of the quarterback and those who are scoring the points. I always joke in training camp, when it's your team against your team, people still cheer the touchdown pass, and then the defense is like, yeah, come on, you know, what are you cheering? Why aren't you cheering for us? That performance late, they kept getting the ball back for Mahomes, and we're not saying anything about it.
I think you can look back at their sort of key defensive stops as really, you know, the how the game turned a little bit. And you know, obviously, you know, the bad interception in the first half by Garoppolo, it came via pressure, Chris Jones, and then somebody else came in after that. You know, that forced the issue. But also that stop with, you know, whatever it was, 6 minutes to go, 7 minutes to go, you know, getting them, you know, second and five is a really good play calling situation for the 49ers there, and for Chris Jones to bat down the first pass and then to kind of, you know, force Garoppolo to hurry up his throw on third down. That was a crucial stop. They don't win the game without something pretty close to that. So, Yeah, I mean, I just thought time and time again. I mean, even, you know, Brashad Breeland, maybe somebody gets overlooked a little. He got hurt in that game, and him to kind of limp back on the field and help them play and keep that secondary relatively intact was absolutely crucial.
What did you think of the OPI call?
I didn't like it. I know other people said, okay, it was clear. He extended his arm. Here's the way I look at it. In another game, maybe that is OPI if they're calling it really tight. They were letting them mug guys last night. You know what I mean? Just felt like time and time again, you'd see really physical. And I love that. I thought it was great. But that one call stuck out like a sore thumb, in my opinion. It didn't fit the way the game had been called to that point and the way it was called for the rest of the second half as well. So, you know, that's how players play. They adjust to the way Vinovich and his crew are calling the game. Doesn't matter who the crew is. But for me, that was the biggest thing. If they were calling it tight all game and they flagged that, okay, I get it. But that didn't fit the path they were on, it felt like.
Were you surprised that the Chiefs ran the ball as well as they did? And after all that we made about what happened with Kareem Hunt and the spectacular seasons that he had, they found a guy who got it done in the biggest moment and could have made a case for his own MVP award.
Yeah, I mean, look, I completely get why Mahomes would win it in the sense that, you know, he didn't play great in terms of, you know, the first part of the game and everything, but, you know, he willed them back. But Williams, I don't know that they do it without him either. You can make a case for it. He was, you know, he's come up so big now 2 years straight in the playoffs, and this is a guy who, you know, the Dolphins were always looking for excuses to move on from, so for it to come back in Miami the way it did. You know, I mean, he and Raheem Mostert were teammates for a hot minute there back in 2015. Both, you know, clearly belong on this stage. Both had an imprint on this game. Yeah, I mean, without Damian Williams making some of those key plays, there were a few spots where the Chiefs' hill would have been a little steeper to climb, I think.
What did you think of the way the Niners kind of made Patrick Mahomes uncomfortable through the first three quarters or so? And did something – Did the Chiefs change something to kind of unlock what they were able to do, or is that just Mahomes going Super Saiyan?
Yeah, you know, it was crazy. I don't know if you guys noticed this. There was a play where Mahomes scrambled. He was under pressure. He stepped up in the pocket. He scrambled, and there was a 49ers defender just sort of standing in front of him, preventing him from getting the first down. And Mahomes got up and looked frustrated. He wanted a late hit call or something. It wasn't there. But to me, it was like, whoa, Patrick is rattled. Like, I had not seen that before. He looked like they had gotten in his head. Constant hits, a barrage of pressures, you know. There was nothing on his throws, too. I mean, prior to that third and 15, the 44-yarder, he was short-arming stuff. He was aiming balls at, you know, the Tyreek Hill play right before that. It hit the, you know, they overturned it on replay. You know, that's a throw he usually drills in there, but it looked like he had no juice in his arm. So I don't know what got into him. It's just that will to overcome or something like that. I think he was a little banged up last night. I don't know that there was any real schematic change they made other than finally doubling Nick Bosa, you know, and making it that much harder for him to get to the quarterback.
That was my next question. Why did it take so long after he's winning every single matchup, as he always does? His pads are always low pads. He's always getting his guy backward. Even when he's not making the play, he's making a play, if you know what I mean. And then finally, you know, maybe we should put another guy on him.
I was shocked. You know, I understood coming out with the game plan of, hey, we're going to run our stuff. We're going to let Eric Fisher, our former number one overall pick in the draft, you know, see what he can do against Nick. But when you see it's not working, you know, it's the coach's job to adjust. They finally did. I thought they did it about a quarter and a half too late, you know. So the Chiefs try to let their guys, their five, block, you know, the opponent's rush. And they trust Mahomes to make smart decisions, to move up in the pocket, use his athleticism, get rid of the ball, whatever it needs to be done to avoid sacks and hits. So they trust their 24-year-old quarterback in a way that some teams don't their 30-year-old quarterback. So that's impressive, and I love Andy Reid for that. However, when it's this big a difference maker in that game and you risk getting your one true ace in the hole hurt, then I'm questioning the strategy a little bit.
When you see Mahomes and look at the entirety of his postseason, the fact that they're down double digits in every single game, that they win each one of those by double digits, this is, I mean, it's really easy to say he's poised for everything. But I truly think he is poised to have whatever kind of career you could imagine here. And it's weird to say that and just to have everybody go, yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I feel, and again, it didn't quite work out this way, but I mean, I feel sort of the same way when Aaron Rodgers went through the playoffs and was the 2010 season. I know they were a sixth seed, and it was sort of a different path and all that, but you know, Rodgers was playing so well. He came out the next year, they were 15-1. I mean, look, everything looked to be where this guy was ascending at a rate that we had never really quite seen before. So, yeah, I mean, I'm on the same sort of, you know, vibe or wavelength that you are with this, in the sense that, you know, even without his best stuff, he just gritted his way to a victory and did what he had to do. And nobody felt like they lost faith in the guy along the way. I don't know why they would, but yeah, I mean, he's got special ability to make magic. I guess that's the best way. Huh. Creative, you know, when things break down, things aren't perfect. That's when you need your quarterback to come up with solutions that previously weren't there.
I keep making the Steph Curry comp because of a guy who changes the geometry of the game a little bit and is doing things that, you know, comes out of college like, yeah, there's some skills there. Okay, you know, we can do some things. There's some measurables there. But then just the approach is different. The attitude is different. And he looks at a deficit and 8 minutes on the clock and figures he can easily, you know, put up three touchdowns like that. So yeah. Steph Curry begat Trae Young and how many other countless shooters from the logo. I wonder what Patrick Mahomes, what seeds are being planted now in 7-on-7s, what seeds are being planted in the way coaches call games, in the way the NFL looks at certain college prospects. What do you think is going to be the larger meaning of this success this early in this way?
Yeah, I mean, that latter point is like a thin line there. It's a really, I think it's an important point to bring up, in the sense that, yeah, of course everybody's out looking for the next Mahomes. And maybe it does open our minds to some prospects that aren't perfect in every situation. With Mahomes, when he came out, I mean, look, I overrated the fact that he threw some bad balls up for grabs and that he was, you know, he looked kind of reckless. And what I ignored was the fact that Texas Tech's defense would give up 42 points on a good day. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he had to do that every single play in college to keep his team in it. I didn't recognize that fact enough when he was coming out. I thought, he's mistake prone. That's not the right way to look at it necessarily. So then you ask yourself, are there guys like that? I mean, who can use all those skills that he has maybe in a slightly different way? I mean, the only one I can really come up with for this next class is Joe Burrow, in the sense that, you know, we never counted him out this year. They were down 17-7 to Clemson. He could run. He could throw outside the pocket. He never looked, unduly pressured or anything like that. I mean, he just looked like a guy who, okay, we got this. All we got to do is score touchdowns the next two times. Let's go to work. So I just don't know if you're going to find anything close to that on an annual basis.
You know, because of the ways, the very different ways that these teams are put together, I find their future independently really fascinating. With the Chiefs, it's, you know, pay Mahomes and fit in whatever else you can around him because that's the guy you have to have. But with the Niners, there's so much more than the sum of their parts, perhaps. And yet, Emmanuel Sanders, Jimmy Ward, Eric Armstead, they're all free agents coming into this next season, or coming into next season. After 2021, it's Sherman and Buckner, both of them up. How do both teams go forward to make sure that they're not the teams that slide back?
Right, and especially, you know, I mean, Garoppolo is now into that contract where, you know, he's getting paid more, and Patrick soon will be that. I mean, his, you know, I think it was Kevin Van Valkenburg who said this morning, is Mahomes' contract the greatest, you know, bargain in history? Mm. Well, yes, probably. Yeah, I mean, he and Dak are probably in the discussion, so, you know, relative to that, obviously the Chiefs won in that window. You know, the 49ers have not yet done that, and it's very difficult with all those, you know, previous first-round picks on the defensive line and, you know, all those other little parts they've put around them. You know, you can't keep them all, and that's the biggest question. I think they really have to prioritize and say which two or three guys are absolutely indispensable on this defense, and, you know, how do we build the depth? That's why teams, I think, are always thinking, you know, like for this coming draft, not who are our, you know, what needs do we not fill this year, but who are our free agents next year and the year after? Those are the positions we have to draft depth at.
Eric, thanks for the time and the expertise today and throughout the playoffs. It's been great.
Yeah, it's been a blast. Talk to you guys down the line. See ya.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.